Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Welcome to Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me, and today we have an excellent interview you can listen to for free, as always. But I do have an ask from you. More specifically, I want you to ask me a question. Get it? See? And I will try to answer that question in an upcoming mailbag episode of the show. We've done this before. They are fun. You will like it, I guarantee, or your money back. So you ask me about anything. You mail it to me at peter@recode.net, and I'll answer in a bit. Okay, now on to antitrust law. Wait, don't go anywhere. This stuff is interesting, and if you care at all about media and tech, it's important because lots of media and tech companies would like to merge and or buy things, and Joe Biden and Lina Khan, his antitrust enforcer, have other ideas. The problem for Khan is that she's been trying to stop the likes of Microsoft and Meta in court, and she has been losing those battles. So, what does that mean for other big companies that want to get bigger, and for anyone who wants to stop that? I've got an excellent person on to walk us through all of that, Cecilia Kang, who covers tech and politics and regulation for the New York Times. So let's hear from Cecilia and me right now. Joe Biden did not run his presidential campaign on the idea that big tech shouldn't get bigger, but since he was elected, his administration has been trying to rein in big tech, and right now it is not going well. Joining us to talk about that is Cecilia Kang, who covers tech and politics for the New York Times. Welcome, Cecilia.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Lina Khan is not the only person Joe Biden has assigned to slow down big tech, rein it in, make it less big, but she is the most prominent person. She's increasingly under attack. Remind us of her background, what she does, and what's been happening recently in Lina Khan's world.
Yeah, so Lina Khan is the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, which is a sort of smaller agency in Washington that people normally don't care about that much, except for the fact that it is the agency sort of that polices commerce. And as part of its mandate, it polices competition in the economy. And so she is the top person, along with some others in government, but she's really the most notable top person, the face of antitrust. And the one, along with an individual who's the head of antitrust at the DOJ, who decides whether big mergers should be approved or blocked. And her background is really interesting. And part of the reason why she gets so much attention is because her background is so unusual. She's very young. She's in her mid-30s. And she came essentially into this field of antitrust while she was a law student at Yale. And she wrote a paper that became quite famous in the very esoteric world of antitrust, where she argued that Amazon was potentially an illegal monopoly for the way that it conducted its marketplace and how it was alleged, in her eyes, allegedly squashing competition with smaller sellers. So her whole idea was that, look, antitrust has normally been judged and deals are reviewed by whether prices go up or prices, you know, or and if that's bad for consumers. But I'm here to tell you that there's a different way that we should be thinking about antitrust when it comes to the tech sector, because so many of these companies like Google and Amazon and Facebook or Meta offer services that are free or cheaper sometimes than competitors. So let's just put aside the idea that consumer prices are the most important metric when it comes to competition analysis. And I believe that we should be thinking about other things related to competition that have nothing to do with necessarily consumer prices, but in the end, affect consumers.
She was described as the hipster antitrust person.
Yes.
Only in antitrust would you describe her as a hipster. The New Yorker did a nice profile of her. We talked about her a couple of years ago. And from the jump, it seemed pretty clear that she was going to have an uphill battle because, as you say, she was proposing a new idea, one that the traditional laws and the way the courts operated wasn't really recognized. So what has happened since she's been in office?
Yeah, so since she's been appointed chair of the FTC, she's taken on some really big cases and has been trying to stop big mergers, particularly across the economy, really. But the ones that are most notable that I care about, and I think that you care about quite a bit, are in tech. And so she has challenged a slightly smaller deal, which was Meta's acquisition of a VR app known as Within. And she has challenged, most notably, Microsoft's $69 billion acquisition of Activision. Huge, huge deal. And she's also taken on some monopoly cases, one being the a case against Meta, formerly known as Facebook, and allegations that it acquired its a monopoly in social media by killing off small nascent competitors at the time, which were Instagram and WhatsApp. It's a really sort of, novel idea that she has. And that's right now winding through the courts. And she is, from what we understand in our reporting, has been investigating Amazon for quite some time, with a lot of the same theories that she brought to that law paper that I mentioned, years ago. And we could probably see some sort of a case, a lawsuit against Amazon coming in the not so distant future.
So the Facebook Meta Within case basically dead, right? They tried to stop Meta. Yes, they lost. They gave up. They gave up. And I remember, and I wrote about this at the time that I was talking to folks at Meta, and they said, we know we can't go buy anything related to social networking. We couldn't buy Twitter if we wanted to, or even a small thing. But we can buy VR stuff because there is no VR market, and there's a lot of people trying to create it, and we're one of many. And then, kind of basically, right after I wrote that, Lina Khan said, "Actually, I don't want you to buy this relative. It's $500 million acquisition of a VR company most people haven't heard of," which took a lot of folks by surprise. So they lost that case. They haven't formally lost the Activision case, but they've lost most of it. It looks like that is going to go through. They say they're still going to challenge it. Besides the fact that it isn't going well, is there some commonality to how these cases are proceeding? Is there some underlying problem, or are they specific to each case?
No, I mean, I think the one thing that both of those cases have in common is that she's going after what we know in the tech world as the stack, and how companies and all tech companies are doing this. They understand that they have to build vertically in order to become sturdy and resilient in the future, and also to become bigger and more powerful and more, richer. So that is just like the business model in Silicon Valley. So you have like companies like Microsoft that has the cloud, and then they have applications like software, and then now they have the gaming consoles, and so they just grow bigger and bigger in what's known as vertical markets, like supply chains. They want to own like this whole supply chain. And both of these deals, whereas ostensibly it looks like they're buying companies that don't directly compete with them, and an antitrust law, that's typically an A-OK green light thing to do.
Right, vertical is supposed to be okay. Horizontal, where you're already in one business, you buy someone who's doing the same thing that you're doing, that's supposed to set off a red flag.
Correct, correct. And that's why vertical cases are so rare. The last time the government took on a big vertical case was when it, in the last administration, tried to stop AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner, and the government lost. And before that, the biggest case was AT&T and basically breaking up, AT&T's monopoly. That was decades ago. So it's really rare. And the reason why it's hard to win is for that very reason. It's on the surface, it doesn't look like these companies directly compete. And any arguments of future anti-competitive practices are hard to prove by economists. And, antitrust law and antitrust cases, it's all about economists duking it out over their models and theories. And it's really hard to project into the future whether there will be competition lost. So
And especially hard in tech, right? When Facebook bought Instagram for $1 billion, it seemed like a crazy price to pay for a photo sharing app with filters. Who cared? It seemed like maybe Facebook overpaid. It's now maybe one of the two biggest engines at Facebook. It's supposedly their or one of their futures. And part of her argument is, especially with these smaller acquisitions, is if we keep letting you buy these things that don't look like anything now, we'll be screwed in the future and then we can't unwind it. Or, you know, it's very hard to unwind it after the
fact. Yeah, totally, Peter. And I think that's the other commonality, is that in both cases, she's thinking about future markets. And that requires new thinking, or at least more expansive thinking of antitrust law. I mean, her argument has always been like, I'm not asking you necessarily to change the laws. Like, you know, that would be good. I do believe that the law should be changed. But in lieu of that, let's just like use existing case law, but like think of using existing antitrust law, but think about things differently. Let's overturn what's known very in the weeds, I know here, but is known as like the Chicago school of antitrust, which is essentially that consumer welfare should be like the most important thing, back to that consumer prices mm-hmm. thing. And that's what she's trying to fight. It's the way that people think about antitrust law. And so like tech is like, you know, it's a real difficult industry to police in terms of competition in her mind, because of these things we talked about, and also because this industry is so fast moving, and she believes that you have to move, and things like network effects, essentially the scale you have and how many people use you, play so heavily into tech and not necessarily in other businesses.
And again, I mean, I'm not going to go super far in the weeds about Chicago and the Federalist Society, and but there's a lot of folks who say, look, this has always been a flawed lens. But part of her argument with tech is like, it particularly doesn't work here because so many of the products are free, ostensibly, to consumers. So it means you could basically never police a Facebook or a Google if this stuff is free and ad supported, doesn't cost me anything. Or if it's something like Amazon, where for a long time they're demonstrably lowering prices, that seems like a good thing. That doesn't work. She knew all this going in. She knew all the challenges going in, was pretty explicit about the fact that, look, the laws we have today don't work. I also don't believe that we're going to change antitrust law in Congress anytime soon, because look at Congress.
I think you're right on that bet. Yeah.
They're not doing anything. And I also know that these court cases are going to be a challenge, and that I probably won't succeed in them. And that's the part where I get a little lost, because if she knew she was unlikely to succeed because of established law, what did she think was going to happen when she went into court and said, I know that according to the laws you guys are paying attention to, this merger should go through, but I have a new idea. What did she think was going to happen?
So I think that there's a bit of a nuance here where she thought that she had a good shot potentially at winning in the courts.
It wasn't just, I'm going to scare you off from doing these deals because you know I'm going to litigate it.
And there's, I think it's a little bit of both, actually. And she thought she generally thinks that the federal government has been way too timid when it comes to trying to break up or trying to block mergers. She thinks that basically that these enforcement agencies, like the one that she now chairs, has been way too soft on and scared of filing lawsuits and going after these deals. And that's been at the detriment of the economy. So she came in saying, you got to be bolder. We've got to be tougher cops. That's the number one thing. And that requires going after lawsuits that we normally wouldn't have and taking a bet on what we believe are the right principles. We may lose. As you said, Peter, she's always known that that's a risk, that she will lose. But she said, even if we do, there are some like victories in doing that. And the number one would be, it makes Congress look at the limits of the laws that are in place, and Congress, and it will potentially move Congress to actually introduce legislation with reforms. That's a big if.
Like, you're going to fall on your sword, but in doing so, falling on your sword is the wrong metaphor, but you're going to fail, but in failing, you're going to achieve a victory down the line. It's like when Obi-Wan Kenobi gets cut down by Darth Vader. But that assumes that Congress is going to go, oh, Lena Khan is onto something. We should fix the law so she doesn't lose this next one. That seems, again, given, you know, if you pay remote attention to American politics, that seems impossible.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like slightly in her defense, the job she had before she arrived at the FTC was actually as a senior staff member in Congress. She was in the House Judiciary Committee and she was working on an antitrust investigation of big tech. And she saw tons of bipartisan support for legislation, but also mm-hmm. for like just generally agreement on both sides of the aisle that big tech was a problem.
Right, but they didn't agree on what the problem was, which is why we still haven't done anything, right?
Exactly. Like, you know, they agreed that on the Republican side that big tech censored them. but Democrats were more focused on the disinformation problem and things like that. So they totally just, so there was just a lot of noise in Congress that might, you know, that might be mistaken for like movement. But you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the big missing piece here, is that even if you lose, maybe Congress will move. That's what's her theory. But that's a lot of ifs and maybes. And what we're seeing is absolutely no, like we're seeing stasis.
We'll be back with Cecilia Kang for the New York Times in a minute. But first, a word from a sponsor.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. With Mercury, you can simplify them with banking and software that power your critical financial workflows, all within the one thing every business needs, a bank account. And with new bill pay and accounting integrations, you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spend, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury, the art of simplified finances.
So there's stasis. She's been losing. What are the ramifications of that? Politically, she's getting hauled in front of Congress. The Republicans teed off on her earlier. That I assume is just sort of, you know, showmanship, doesn't really matter. What are the practical effects of her not succeeding to date?
Well, the most practical effect is that companies that had been a little bit timid and afraid that if they brought a big deal before the FTC that she now runs, that they just would be challenged and potentially lose in court. And now they're feeling more emboldened that, okay, well, the courts are kind of on our side.
That's kind of counterproductive, though. It's not just that it hasn't been successful. The theory is she's now encouraging these folks to say, fuck it, let's go for it. You know, we got lawyers, we're probably going to win. Let's go.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think that they, like, you know, one person from the industry was saying, like, you know, now she's viewed as like she and the agency is viewed as like a paper tiger. It's sort of like, you know, why wouldn't I go for it now? So that's the most practical. The other is that, you know, these judges can point to these decisions in Microsoft, Activision, and Meta Within to say, like, with cases that may have a lot of parallels, as their footnotes in their opinions to allow those mergers to go through too. So it's like she's building, like one thing that she wanted to do, Peter, was to build case law, at least to slightly tweak interpretations of the law so that you have judges that will say something like, we disagree with this, but we actually agree with you, FTC, on this and this and this. And she was hoping that those opinions would be developed into some sort of case law that could be used later. But she could be establishing case law and new precedents that work against this agenda,
you
know, she has.
You said I care about tech, and I do. I care about tech and media. The media companies for a while have been looking to consolidate, and they kind of haven't been for a few reasons, but it's not because of legal reasons. But one sort of belief that a lot of folks had was that you won't see tech companies buying these distressed media assets. You know, Bob Iger put up a big chunk of Disney for sale this month. And up until recently, you would have said, well, we know who's not going to buy it, the tech guys, because there's no way politically that they're going to, they just don't want to touch that. It's going to be too difficult. Is that calculus? I mean, there's also business reasons for them not wanting to buy linear TV, for instance. But do you see that thinking changing, that the deals, not just that people who wanted to merge are more likely to do so, but mergers that didn't seem possible are now more possible?
That's what I hear from the industry. And I hear that, you know, do I know of a deal that's imminent? No, but I think Microsoft is a roadmap. They bought a content company that's like, you know, and huge. And
they are also the company that's been least targeted. It's not a coincidence. One, they got sued by the federal government 20 years ago, were chastened, and then have also worked really hard in the last decade plus to say, there's a problem with tech and it's not us, it's everyone else. So it's not surprising that they're the least targeted, but still, like you said, it's them going, yep, we're going to buy this content.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was super bold. And if they were going to, you know, they knew, I mean, like kudos to like, you know, from a lobbyist perspective, you have to kind of look at how Microsoft operates and see that they were pretty masterful. They save their big punches for when it matters. And they're very engaged in Washington and lobbying. And this was a deal that mattered because it really brings in a completely new channel for them of revenue. And it all ties into their whole bigger strategy of cloud and gaming and like everything. So yeah, they're a roadmap for other companies. And as you noted, there is a growing, you know, schism between, you know, tech and media in terms of, you know, how well they're doing. So there's so many distressed media assets out there. I think it's kind of, you know, inevitable, you know, that you'll see especially these kinds of vertical mergers because they're just the courts have not swayed from decades long, you know, sort of permissive decisions on vertical mergers.
Some White House questions, and this is a world that I really don't understand at all. First of all, you know, Joe Biden could be out of office a year and a half, right? Is there a sense, first of all, is what has happened to her standing within the White House that it hasn't been successful? And is there a sense that, you know, either she or the Biden administration wants to move really quickly to try to get something done while they still can?
Yeah, I think she's still quite popular and supported, especially within what's known as the more progressive, as you said, some might call it the hipster antitrust crowd. I wouldn't say that, but some people say that. But like the more progressive, like left-leaning, long-term vision, thinking of like just basically let's flip the table on antitrust point of view. She's still incredibly popular. And she like the White House came to her defense after the Microsoft Activision opinion by a judge to not hold up the deal with a statement saying they support her and they think she's done great work. And I think it was incredibly indicative, like there was very revealing that just this week or just last week, there was an announcement by the White House, the Department of Justice, and the FTC, so that means including Lina Khan, on even tougher guidelines for how they're going to approach mergers. This is some really in the weeds stuff, and I'm not going to bore your audience with it. But essentially, they came up with a bullet point list of the way that, like, how they're going to judge whether they stop or approve mergers. And there are just a ton more guidelines that are specific to the tech industry that includes things like labor that's never been included as well, network effects, nascent competition platforms. Like that's like basically saying we're not backing down. And this was a joint announcement with the White House. So she's supported for sure.
And that's the other question I have is, you know, we followed the 2016 campaign over at Recode/Vox. And what is Joe Biden saying about tech? He's never talked about tech while he was campaigning. I think maybe once he said something that Section 230, a whole discussion needs to be revised. But you would not have gotten any sense from him in any of his public statements that he really wanted to see, you know, Microsoft unable to buy a game platform or whatever it was. Is this something that he personally is passionate about? And if not, who in the White House or who in politics is convincing him to spend, you know, really precious political capital going after this stuff?
Yeah, I don't have a sense that he is specifically interested in internet companies and Silicon Valley, some of the minutiae that we're discussing. He's very interested in the industrial policy battles between the U.S. and China. And that trickles down to like chip supply chains and stuff like that. But this is, I think within the White House, there's a strong feeling in his National Economic Council, the NEC, that the economic agenda has to include a progressive sort of new deal approach to and trust busting idea to antitrust and competition. Not only do I think that, it's just fact. They announced that, you know, that's like part of what they call Bidenomics. And the big picture takeaway from that is if you don't curb concentration of power across industries, you won't have equality within the country. You will continue to have inequities that in the labor market, geographies, in wages, all these problems that we're seeing, particularly exaggerated in the tech economy. And so this is all swept into this bigger idea of this bigger agenda known as Bidenomics, which is to basically spread the goods and to lift up more economies, like geographical economies that have not enjoyed the boom of like some of the coastal cities that have. So it's part of a bigger strategy. Is it the top item? Is it even within the top 10 things that the White House has to think about? When I say it, meaning big tech and mm-hmm. antitrust, is it one of the top 10 items that they discuss every morning in their meeting? I don't think so. Not at all. But does it also help with their political base? Is it sort of a political discussion? Right. Absolutely.
Because there's a general, we can't articulate why we don't like big tech. And depending where you sit in the political spectrum, like we said earlier, you have different criticisms of big tech. And you may really like individual big tech companies, and most of them are pretty popular. I think Meta is the one real exception there. But I'm sort of for a general, you know, go get Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I'm for this idea that these companies have become too powerful, too big, you know, and I mean, this is like legitimate stuff that, you know, when I in terms of like all the consumer polls, I hear that yes, some of these companies are quite popular in some ways, but there's generally a concern in, you know, you see all these polls about certain tech companies shouldn't continue to grow, that mm-hmm. there should be more competition, like more of a pathway for startups, that kind of a thing. So it's a popular idea with not a lot of downside.
And just remind us of the remaining big cases on the docket. There's a DOJ, ongoing DOJ, multiple suits against Google. That's the DOJ. That's not her bailiwick. There's the Facebook stuff, part of which she inherited from Trump. And then revised. So those are going on. You think Amazon is coming?
Yes, I think so. They've been working on it forever. Yeah.
They took a swing at Microsoft, failed basically. And Apple doesn't seem to come up in these discussions. Although there's a lot of people I talk to say, if you really want to go after antitrust, you should really crack down on what Apple does with its app store, because it really prevents lots of people from doing interesting stuff in tech, because Apple owns that platform and you have to go by their rules. But it doesn't seem like there's any movement to curtail that.
Well, there's been a long investigation at the DOJ on Apple and the App Store, it's been a little quiet. The last that I had heard, which was a little while ago, I need more updated information, was that it was sort of fits and starts. They have so much of their staff focused on the two Google cases, once, you know, including the ad tech case, which is, as you know, it's a super hairy case because ad tech is so complicated. So they have a ton of people that focus on that. So Apple's in there. It's just, it's kind of, you know, TBD on what they actually do. Similarly to the Amazon investigation at the FTC. So those are the big ones. And they just started, and they're starting other ones too. Like they started an investigation of OpenAI, artificial intelligence. So there's a lot of like activity with very limited resources, frankly, within these agencies to actually conduct these investigations.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm big tech, right, I go from the start, I've already got an advantage on you because I have essentially unlimited funds. And now you're spreading yourself thin. So go for it. Cecilia, this is so overdue. I'm glad we did it. Let's have you back on.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Great seeing you.
Thank you. Thanks again to Cecilia. Thanks again to Joe Lee and Jelani for editing and producing this show. To our sponsors for bringing it to you for $0. And for you guys for listening. And for sending me a question for our upcoming mailbag episode at peter@recode.net. This is Recode Media. See you next week.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.